We're going to pick up where we left off yesterday in Leviticus chapter 19, verse number 23. Book of Leviticus, you remember, is a rule book for the Levitical tribe. It has a lot of information in it about how they should conduct themselves as they provide support for the priesthood and as the priesthood does the mediation work for the Israeli people. But there's also a lot of information as to what the Levites are supposed to tell the Israelis they should be doing, how they should conduct themselves as part of this holy nation, this royal priesthood of believers that God is calling them to be. So in Leviticus 19:23, it says, when you enter the land, so we're looking forward to the time when the Israelis will go into the promised land, and you plant all kinds of trees for food, then you shall count their fruit as forbidden or uncircumcised or off limits. That would probably be the best way for us to look at it. 3 years it shall be forbidden or off limits to you. It shall not be eaten. So you plant a tree, a fruit tree, and for the next 3 years, you don't take any of the fruit that might be produced by it. You let all of the energy of that tree stay within itself and be used to get nice and strong. Verse 24, but in the fourth year, all its fruit shall be holy, an offering of praise to He who is. So the fourth year of the tree's existence, all the fruit is taken off of it and given straight to God. That is, given to the Levites and to the priests for their use as an offering to God. Verse 25, in the fifth year you are to eat of its fruit, that its yield may increase for you. I am He who is your God. So year number five, you take a tenth part of the produce from that particular tree and give that to God as part of the tithe. You're going to be giving it to the Levites and the priesthood. But the nine-tenths of the fruit produced in that fifth year, and this will be the way it works from here on out, now belongs to you for your own use or for sale to others so that you can use the proceeds of it to buy other things that you need. Now, this was the way that the Israelis were supposed to be living in the Promised Land. And from time to time, I hear myself kind of speaking on the terms of this is what you're supposed to do. And I want you to understand that I'm speaking as if I were in the time of the Israelis, in the time that Moses is passing this information on. I'm not saying that this is the way we have to do it. Now, if you wanted to, it'd be perfectly appropriate. But you are not required to live under the dictates of the Mosaic Law. New Testament books make that very, very plain. Verse number 26. You shall not eat anything with the blood. We've talked about that before. That's arterial blood. And the book of Acts chapter 15 makes it plain that that is, in fact, something that we still live by, not because it's part of the Mosaic Law, but because it is part of the universal law that God put in place back in Genesis chapter 9 when He allowed meat to be added to the human diet. That was after the flood. So none of us should be eating arterial blood, nor practice divination or soothsaying. Now, divination is an attempt to get information out of the spirit world. Soothsaying is a variation of that. It's a contacting of the spirit world for your own benefit. The people in Canaan had been doing this for a long time because they had had contact with the spirit world. And we're talking about the demonic world, the world where the fallen angels who joined in Satan's rebellion live and carry on their activity. So those people had been practicing divination and soothsaying, and God is telling the Israelis ahead of time, when you get in there, don't do like they've been doing. I like to kind of put it this way. The spirit world is most certainly real, but it is a bad neighborhood in a lot of respects. And so those of us who are believers, those of us who are Christians, have no business going into that dangerous neighborhood. Now, if God contacts us out of the spirit world, as we see in the pages of Scripture, that's a different thing, because God can be trusted. But we are not to be reaching out into it, because there's a lot of con angels out there in it. The fallen angelic world is out to mess with us. And so we sometimes will have a hard time discerning between the two if we intentionally try to reach out into that world. So the rule is, don't do it. Verse number 27 is going to be tied in with verse 28. So you can't take this as a reference to barbering, that is, the style that you keep your head hair in. You shall not round off the side growth of your heads, nor harm the edges of your beard. Now, this is the reason why when you go to Israel, or you go to neighborhoods that have a lot of very conservative Hasidic Jews living in them, you will see the young boys and the older men running around with curls hanging down from the sides of their faces, where they have not cut their sideburn area at all, because that's what we're talking about here, the side growth of your heads and the edges of your beard. So they looked at this passage of Scripture, and they counted it as a reference to barbering, the way you keep your head hair in style. But that's not the point. You have to keep reading in verse 28. You shall not make any cuts on your body for the dead, nor make any tattoo marks on yourself. I am He who is. So the things that we're talking about here, the shaving of the side of your face, where your sideburn and the corner of your beard is, that was a practice done by the Canaanites as part of, I don't know if I want to use the word honoring, but rather the veneration of their dead relatives and the people who had died in their culture. And so the Israelis were told, don't be doing that, because it's actually part of this divination soothsaying process that the Canaanites were involved in. Same thing with cutting yourself on behalf of the dead, which it's basically you're offering blood, your own blood, as a sacrifice to the demonic world, the spirit world, on behalf of your dead relatives, to try to keep them safe as they make their passage into the afterlife. Remember, this is the pagan concept of dealing with death. And then also making tattoos on your body for the dead. That is to put some sort of foreign substance underneath the skin so that it forms a pattern or some sort of image on behalf of the dead. All of these things were off limits. And so this, I have to be completely honest when approached on this topic of cutting your hair in a certain way or making tattoos in your body. If you do it for the purpose of reaching out into the spirit world or somehow being connected into the dead, you're not supposed to be doing that stuff. It's not appropriate. Tattoos, I don't think, I'm going to give you my opinion here, I don't think they're a good health decision, folks. You should not voluntarily be putting foreign substances under your skin. And some people learn the hard way that when you do that and the person has not followed good hygienic practices, you end up with infections or problems. Plus, tattoos are very, very long term. And later in life, and I've heard this from many of those that got tattoos when they were younger, regretted ever getting the tattoo that they had because it was now shameful to them, or it didn't even look the same way anymore. So it looked kind of goofy. So just on the pragmatic side of things, I don't think tattooing is a wise choice. I know there's a lot of you, you like to do it because you think it's pretty, you think it's some sort of body art, and if you're doing it for that purpose, I do not believe you're violating the passage here. But I have seen some people who will have tattoos of dead people placed on their bodies as some sort of memory aspect. That would be part of what's being spoken against here. So I would definitely recommend against that. Verse number 29. Do not profane your daughter by making her a harlot, so that the land will not fall to harlotry and the land become full of lewdness. Now, I've got my hand on my face right now because I'm thinking, what insane parent would think it was a good idea to sell his daughter's body for sexual use to other people? And the only answer that I can come up with that is a horrendous parent. A parent with a cold heart and a love for money. And so this is something that God did not want to see the Israelis engaging in. It had gone on in the world of the Canaanites. They were a sex-crazed world and engaged in all sorts of strange behavior. We've already seen that God warned against quite a bit of that. Here, the people who are supposed to be God's own special treasure are told, don't even think about something like that. Because if you do that, it is going to lead down a path of darkness that will end up in judgment. Verse number 30. You shall keep my Sabbaths and revere my sanctuary. I am he who is. Now, the Sabbaths here in plural is not just simply the weekly Sabbath, because they were supposed to take a day off as a culture. They'd gone for generations in Egypt as slaves and never got any time off. So they're supposed to take those days off and they're supposed to protect them on behalf of other people. But there's also holidays. The word holiday in English is just a sliding together of the two words holy and day. So there are quite a few holy days in the Jewish calendar that they're supposed to take another day off. And first day of the month is an example of that. Pentecost, first day of Feast of Unleavened Bread, last day of Feast of Unleavened Bread, first day of Tabernacles, last day of Tabernacles. These are all special holidays that all the Jewish people were supposed to just close up their normal procedures and just enjoy each other's company and to worship and thank God for their life. Well, that's why the sanctuary is mentioned in here too, because the place where they're supposed to come and thank God is the tabernacle. And so you're supposed to take those holidays off, and as it is an opportunity to you, go and tell God specifically, thank you. Verse 31, do not turn to mediums or spiritists. So we're back on this topic of trying to tap into the spirit world. A medium is a human person who tries to allow the spirits to speak through them. And the spiritists are those who use all sorts of mechanisms and formula to reach into the spirit world. They'll use drugs, some of the mushrooms and plant saps that have this hallucinogenic ability. these guys would use in order to change their state of mind, alter their consciousness so they could reach into the spirit world. So God says, don't be going to people like that. Do not seek them out to be defiled by them. I am he who is your God. And even though we're talking about things that the Israelis were warned against, these are principles that hold over into our own time period. The spirit world is no place to monkey around in. And so you should not be playing with Ouija boards. It's not a toy. It was a tool to be used to reach into the spirit world. And you should not be smoking marijuana, because one of the big uses of marijuana around the world has been to alter your mental state, your spiritual state, so that you could tap in to the spirit world. So it should not be done. So these are principles that are still true for our own Christian world today. Don't play around in that dangerous spiritual neighborhood. Verse 32, you shall rise up before the gray-headed and honor the aged, and you shall revere your God. I am he who is. Now, I happen to be among the gray-headed now, and I had been raised to show respect for all those older than myself. And I think that that is also something that should be taught to this day. Those who live long in the land have gained at least some life experience along the way, for nothing else but to have gathered information from the school of hard knocks. And so there needs to be some sort of respect shown for folks like that. And I love to see younger people showing clear honor and respect for those older than themselves. And, of course, it also goes along with the idea of showing respect to God. He is the most aged of all, since he is timeless. He has no beginning of days. He's just always been. And so he needs to be honored. Verse 33, when a stranger resides with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. So you've got an immigrant that's living in your country. You've got a tourist that's in your country. You are not supposed to look at them as a target of opportunity where you can take advantage of them, because maybe they don't speak the language as well. Maybe they don't know the cultures as well. Maybe they don't know the circumstances or the economy or any of those things as well, because they are a foreigner in a strange land. That is no reason to take advantage of them. In fact, the godly way of doing things, the biblical teaching, is to show hospitality. Hospitality literally means the love and care of strangers. You look out for them. So if you run across folks that fall into this category, look out for their benefit. Make sure they're not conned by other people who are trying to take advantage of them. Be a defender of those that maybe are a little naive because of their background in our country. Verse 34, the stranger who resides with you shall be to you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself. For you were aliens in the land of Egypt. I am he who is your God. So the Israelis understood what it felt like to be the odd man out, to be the foreigner, and to not have a full appreciation by the people who are natives of that land. And so God reminds them, you take good care of those that are in your country and show them the love and consideration that you'd want to have. And I think the same thing applies for us in our modern day Christian culture. Those of us who have traveled in other countries, who have actually lived in other countries, we appreciate this because we know what it feels like to be in that situation. And so we want to practice the golden rule to do unto others as we would have done unto us. Verse 35, you shall do no wrong in judgment, in measurement of weight, or capacity. You shall have just balances, just weights, a just ephah, and a just hin, that's dry measure and wet measure containers. I am he who is your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. So here is fairness in the area of trade. They used a lot of weight scale and measurement capacity means of selling things. And the cheaters would have a couple of different sets of weights. One for when they bought, you know, to put everything in their favor, and another when they sold to keep the transaction in their favor. And apparently, the cheaters also had different size measurement containers. One that was overly large when they were buying something so that they got more for the price, and something that was a little smaller than standard when they were selling it so that they would not give up as much of their material that they were selling for the price that was being paid. That's just wrong. When you go to the gas station, you'll see that there's a sticker on the pump that shows that this thing has been checked by a representative of the weights and standards division of your state, because they want to make sure nobody monkeys around with the pump and sells their gas at less volume than a gallon, because that would be cheating. When you go to the stores, you know that those scales are checked also by representatives from weights and standards, because they should not be cheating you. So that's what this principle is that God puts forward. God is fair, and he expects his people to be fair. Verse 37, you shall thus observe all my statutes and all my ordinances and do them. I am he who is. So our actions are supposed to be linked to God. We act like he acts. We are fair as he is fair. Chapter number 20. Then he who is spoke to Moses, saying, you shall also say to the sons of Israel, any man from the sons of Israel or from the aliens sojourning in Israel who gives any of his offspring to Molech shall surely be put to death. The people of the land shall stone him with stones. I will also set my face against the man and will cut him off from among his people because he has given some of his offspring to Molech so as to defile my sanctuary and to profane my name. If the people of the land, however, should ever disregard that man when he gives any of his offspring to Molech so as to not put him to death, then I myself will set my face against that man and against his family, and I will cut off from among their people both him and all those who play the harlot after him by playing the harlot after Molech. So Molech, of course, is that twisted version of God the Creator who judged and destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. His other name is Chemosh, which is destroyer. Molech, it means king, so the destroyer king. The Moabites and the Ammonites, who are descendants of Lot and his two daughters, are the ones that came up with this very wicked practice. It seems that either on the anniversary of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, or perhaps on the birth dates of Moab and Ammon, there would be these celebrations of surviving that. And they would get drunk and intentionally get pregnant. And then the babies from the last celebration would then be burnt up in fire as an offering to the destroyer king who took out Sodom and Gomorrah, but apparently asking him by that to not destroy us, keep us safe. So this twisted remembrance of the story in the book of Genesis spread out from Moab and Ammon over into Canaan. And now that the Israelis are getting ready to go in there, they are being warned, don't you dare practice that garbage. Don't you dare let anyone inside the boundaries of the Promised Land practice this garbage of murdering children after you've gotten drunk and gotten pregnant on purpose in honor of this Molech Chemosh character that you think is the one that destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. And God says, if you let this slide, I will deal with it myself. And we know, of course, that eventually the Israelis were kicked out of the Promised Land, in part because they were practicing this Chemosh Molech stuff. Now, we've only got a minute left, so I'm going to go ahead and make my current events appeal on this topic. We have allowed to be adopted in our country the practice of abortion for any reason whatsoever, including I didn't really want to get pregnant. It was an accident. And this is not a good thing in our culture. It is the killing of a life. And we need to speak out against it. We need to convince our leaders and convince our fellow Americans that this is not the way we should treat our babies that are not yet born. And if we don't, I fear that the judgment of God will have to come on our society for allowing this practice to continue in our midst. So pray for an end to abortion, not only here in America, but around the world. Let's pray for the little ones.